In the feature film Hotel Rwanda, the owner of an upscale hotel in Kigali uses his influence and bravery to save thousands of Tutsis during the 1994 genocide. It's based on a true story, but there are thousands of untold stories of rescuers in villages across Rwanda who risk their lives trying to save others. As NPR's Gregory Warner reports, 20 years after the genocide, those stories are slowly starting to be heard.
To get to the house of Olive Mukankusi, you have to drive for about 30 minutes down a dirt road in the eastern Rwandan province of Ramagana to the village of Igati. The banging is Olive's husband fixing a pig shed out back. And inside their house, with mud walls and dirt floor, Olive tells a story that she's only told 3 times in 20 years. First to a local judge, then to an American genocide researcher, and now here. The story begins in April 1994, at the start of the genocide against the Tutsis by Hutu militias called Interahamwe. Walking down a road of torched houses, Olive met 2 Tutsi girls, aged 15 and 17, 2 former neighbors before Olive got married and moved away.
They seemed to be, confused and not knowing where to go because they had a few things folded in their hands. They told me, go back where you're coming from, because here the Interahamwes are killing all the Tutsis they're coming across.
Right there, on the road, the then 22-year-old Olive, a Hutu, made a decision about these 2 girls, one that even now, with everything that's happened since, she's never questioned.
I decided to bring them with me and was ready to die with them, whatever would happen to me or my family.
Behind the house, she shows me a pit for making banana beer. There she hid the girls and also an elderly neighbor that she met. Later, she moved them inside the house under some clothes. Knowing she could be killed for this act of collaboration, she steeled herself to break the news to her husband.
Of course, I was a little bit worried that he might give them in, like most other men were doing. But he saw that I had loved these people. And if he did anything bad to these people, he would have betrayed me as well.
The Rwandan genocide moved quickly in some parts of the country, but more slowly in others. In Olive's village, they killed only the men at first, to save the women as future wives. But a couple of weeks later, they started killing women too. And a gang of 100 militiamen, she says, came to her house and dragged out the 2 girls and the older woman. A neighbor had tipped them off. Grabbing Olive as well, the militiamen, singing battle songs, marched the 4 to a killing site by the river. And there, all might have been lost, if not for a habit that Olive had picked up. Lacking a bank account and distrustful of thieves, she kept all her cash sewn up in the fabric of her dress. She'd just sold her harvest and had enough money to last her family for the next 6 months, 20,000 francs, worth then about $140. The militiamen gave her the option to buy her life back.
When they saw the money, they were very happy and forgot whatever was happening. They decided to leave us and go with the money.
4 days later, the Tutsi soldiers, the Rwandan Patriotic Front, arrived, and they rescued all the Tutsis. But then they put almost every Hutu man in prison, even the rescuers, like Olive's husband. Back then, there wasn't yet evidence to distinguish killer from protector. Today, at the office of the nonprofit Aegis Trust in Kigali, dozens of young Rwandans wearing headphones are transcribing the testimonies of survivors, perpetrators, and rescuers. Deputy Director Yves Kamuronsi says that featuring these testimonies of rescuers is more important today than ever.
It's now 20 years after genocide, and then in every commemoration, in every movie we have seen stories of survivors, we have seen stories of perpetrators, but we have seen less stories of rescuers.
He says these stories are important, especially for the more than half the country born after the genocide. He says they need to hear that not every one of their countrymen played their ethnically assigned role of killer or victim.
I would say it's an educational tool for young people, for the young generation, but also for the rest of the world.
Yet most of Rwanda's rescuers are not officially recognized. The government program to give rescuers that recognition, that official thank you, ran out of funds after canvassing just 20% of the country. Rwanda has been slower on this front than Holocaust researchers, who were seeking out the stories of German rescuers, so-called righteous among the nations, by the 50s, not 10 years after the war. Back in the village of Igati, I speak to another rescuer, Goodleaves Mukamunana. Speaking through the same translator, she says that some Hutu neighbors have ostracized her.
When they talk to me about rescuing, they ask me, well, you rescued Tutsis. If anything bad, do you think they would rescue you? And I always tell them, yes, they would. I have no doubt about it.
You're no longer one of us, her neighbors would say. You're one of them. But that also was not the case. While Olive's husband was in prison, a local Tutsi leader claims part of her land. They're still fighting it out in court. And Goodleaf says that for all those years her husband was in prison for a crime he didn't commit, her children were asking her hard questions.
Why is it that we know you hid people here at home? Why is it that they decided to take daddy? So I told them, you don't have to worry, because the act we did, God is going to reward us.
Now, in 2007, Olive and Goodleaves got the chance to tell their stories for the first time in local courts called Gachacha. Their stories were quickly confirmed by neighbors and their husbands were released. Today, they're making up for that lost decade of earnings. Goodleaves longs to send her brightest middle daughter to a university that she's coming to realize she'll never afford. And so I ask if she has any second thoughts. Had she and her family fled earlier instead of hanging back to rescue, her husband might not have been rounded up and arrested. He might have avoided those 12 years in prison.
No, that cannot stop me. I'll double even that. I'll do it again and again and again. Because I now see the outcome. I talk with anyone with no problem.
Her clear conscience is her reward, she says. Gregory Warner, NPR News, Kigali.